Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Pulse podcast, where we talk to digital health leaders, entrepreneurs, and enthusiasts from all over the world. I'm very excited to talk to our guest today, but just before that, a quick reminder to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our LinkedIn page for the latest updates. Today, we have with us Harvey Castro. He is a physician, healthcare consultant, serial entrepreneur, and author of ChatGPT Healthcare, which will be the focus of our conversation today. Welcome to the podcast, Harvey. Thank you so much for taking out the time.
Thanks for having me, and an honor to meet you.
Well, Harvey, you know, just before we dive into ChatGPT, and we will get to that, I always like to get to know my guests a little bit better. Tell me a little bit about your background, about your clinician journey, about entrepreneurship journey, and how this led to you becoming an author.
Yeah. So many things to say. I've been blessed. I'm a first generation American, born in New York City, in a poverty state. Really grew up with a very, very humble beginning. Throughout my journey in healthcare, I started with just a simple vitamin store. That's where my first job basically was. And since then, it just opened my heart to stay in healthcare. My journey has been quite interesting. Couldn't afford college, so I joined the U.S. Army. Couldn't afford the med school books, so I started hitting up all the medical school bookstores and publishers to see if they would give me free books, and which they did, and I became a author at that point as well. And then fast forward in residency, that entrepreneur spirit kept me strong. I saw an opportunity that at the time they were talking about different vitamins helping with your heart health, and I made my own formula, had a cardiologist bless it, and we went national with that vitamin company. And then after that, as soon as the iPhone came out, this is how I ended up with ChatGPT. When the iPhone came out, I thought, huh, this is an opportunity to create medical apps in the App Store. And it was literally in its infancy. So I created the first IV meds app. Because I'm an ER doctor, I was seeing a patient coding, and I asked the nurse to start a drip, and I noticed she got a textbook out, and it took quite a long time. And I thought, huh, I could probably do this better. And then fast forward, when ChatGPT came out, I saw this and I thought, wow, back when I was writing iPhone apps, a lot of my apps were getting rejected by the App Store. Today, they would be accepted. And I thought, this is going to be the same thing with ChatGPT. It's going to go out and people are going to love it, but then the App Store and other people are going to reject it. But in the few years, I see this being more mainstream.
I mean, I definitely wish I had ChatGPT or something like ChatGPT back in my student days, you know, going through all those big fat textbooks and burying our heads in them, I think. I mean, it's exciting times, right? All this talk about AI and all this talk about healthcare innovation. But coming to ChatGPT, have you used it? What has your experience been like, and what have you used it for?
I have used it basically for everything. I've experimented outside of medicine. I've done some geeky stuff. I actually had it. I wrote all the significant dates and times between my wife and I, and I had it write a romantic song, and I had it write chords to the song so it rhymes. And then I have a friend that plays.
How did that turn out?
It's coming out pretty good. A friend of mine is basically working out the chords for me so that we can hear how it would sound. But when I read it, it sounds pretty good. Also, other fun stuff that I'm doing is just on the creative side, just asking it questions, how to better articulate a certain point or a certain idea. Or I use it for brainstorming sessions. I'll say, here's a topic, here's my thoughts, and then give me more. And so it's been fun kind of hearing it from someone else, that normally if I would talk to a business colleague or a friend and we'd kind of have conversation, but here's an opportunity to have one-on-one. And then on the healthcare side, the geeky part of me, I'm always enjoying just testing it and giving them symptoms or clinical cases to see what it would say, or give me differential diagnosis, different possibilities of things. And it's doing a pretty good job. With that said, I have noticed the hallucination effect, and we can go over that in the talk as well.
Do you think it's more reliable than Google? You know what they say, that don't Google your symptoms. It's probably going to tell you that you're going to die. Or for the layperson, especially, you know, it can be very overwhelming when a patient goes online, wants to check you know, learn more about what symptoms they're having. And it's just, they might interpret it either incorrectly, or they just don't understand it. Do you think because ChatGPT is more evolved and it's more, and it is said to give more human-like sort of generate answers, do you think it'll be more beneficial for patients? Is it, just a follow-up, sorry, is it safe enough?
At the current state, it's not, because of the hallucination effect. And let me just kind of explain. I'm an ER doctor. I love ER medicine. And I can ask pretty much anything in ER. And if it says anything back, I know if it's correct or if it's not quite correct. But this is my point. If I ask a question very specific to pediatric cardiology and the following procedures, and it would spit out an answer, and I would read it and say, this looks good to me. But since I'm not that specialist, it could actually be wrong. And so that analogy holds true for patients. Patients may not know that part of medicine. And yes, they know enough about their disease, but when they ask for more advice, it may say something that kind of sounds good and they may take it, and that's dangerous. And let me take that example one more step further. Here in the United States, if I see a patient and I want to give them X or Y treatment, I can write a prescription. But if they go to, if this is outside the United States and they're self-diagnosing and they go straight to the pharmacy, they may elect the drug based on ChatGPT's recommendation, and it could be totally dangerous. And so I warn people. In fact, I'm writing a book, another book right now, and I'm creating an algorithm how to go about this information.
No, I think these are all very valid points. And so, you know, in my sort of conversation spaces, I discuss this point as well. I think it's only as good as the prompts that you give it, but then it really depends on who is giving the prompts. Is it an expert? Are the generated answers being interpreted again, or being fine-tuned or tweaked before they go out by an expert? Or is it just, you know, maybe a non-clinician medical writer? They might not have the background knowledge to tweak it even to that accuracy. So I think all these, we have to keep all of this in mind in terms of at least creating healthcare content or patient education resources. Absolutely. Why do you think it became so big so fast? I mean, considering that there have been other AI tools in the past, some of them have been pretty decent. You know, smart conversational AI bots, and we've been using AI in healthcare as well. Why do you think this became viral? I mean, a million followers or a million users within like the first week.
Yes, you just went, but I see your question. I think the reason it went viral is because it applies to so many of us. So it's two-part answer. One, it applies to all industries, all ages. And two, the customization ability that it yields is amazing. And third, I'll give another one. The fact that it's open AI, meaning other companies like Google have similar technology, but the fact that they allowed it first, it was like the introduction to this. And because so many people were curious and then started talking about it and using it in their silos, meaning their own businesses, it was doing so well. And so I'm just amazed myself with all the different applications. I literally now have it on my computer up all the time. So I can, whenever I have a question, instead of Googling it, I'll ask it. Or if I'm working on something, just to see what it has to say. The other part I want to add is, like you mentioned, it's all about the prompts. And the more you know about how to use it, the better user you will be. And so I'm starting to now play more with, give me a doctor's tone, or give me a five-year-old's tone, just to see how it changes the language, which is to me amazing.
So I'm sort of taking away that, you know, the more you play with it, the more you'll learn how to use it. I think that's how you sort of, you refine the answers that it generates. But also, what do you think is going to be the implication for clinicians? I mean, do you think that clinicians are open to using a tool like ChatGPT in healthcare? And I know that I'd love to sort of have you highlight some of the more pertinent points in your book.
Number one, the answer is yes. I see physicians in, like all populations, there's three facets. There's one that are the early adopters, some that come a little later, and then some that are the late adopters. As a whole, I feel like physicians are more traditional, take their time, they're more cautious nature, so they don't tend to be those early adopters as opposed to other industries and age groups. With that said, I am noticing a group shift in the sense that some doctors, for example, the TikTok viral doctor of rheumatology that used that as an example to fight United Health, that went viral. All the doctors saw that as an opportunity and now are starting to integrate it. What's interesting to me is when I speak, and I'll mention things on the book along the way, what's interesting is I speak to doctors and they're almost shy about saying, hey, I'm using it, I'm doing it, because I think there's a stigma behind it. There's this, well, are you not good enough? Does your brain cannot handle that? Do you need something else to help you? And I think some physicians are just don't want to step forward and say, oh, I use it. But let me give you some examples of how I have seen doctors use it. Doctors have shared with me, I've used it, combination of, let's give you a particular example. Say I'm using a fictitious example. Say I'm in the ER and a patient presents with certain symptoms and it totally has me stumped. And I literally do not know what's going on. There's doctors that I've talked to that are taking those symptoms, radiology results, putting it into ChatGPT and asking for a differential diagnosing this and finding different diseases and then going down the path. To me, that's no different than going on MD Consult or some Google research or some reputable website to look up questions. The difference is instead of having to search, you're able to constellate all the symptoms, everything, and have a conversation with the colleague basically, and it spit back information. And like you said, the better the prompts from the doctor, the more accuracy, the better ways of angling the questions, the more output. And so that's one amazing way that I'm seeing. The other, being an ER doctor, I struggle sometimes with patients from, I used to work near an airport, and I used to struggle with patients coming from different parts of the world because some of the languages they spoke was not in my EMR, was not part of my translation services. And so it would be nice to be able to take that discharge instruction, obviously being careful with HIPAA, not putting any identifiers, not putting any patient name or anything like that, just taking the raw data and saying, okay, this is diagnosis, this is the plan, put it in there and ask it for special language. And then it spit out that language and be able to share that with the patient. The ability to take care of a patient and communicate, because as you know, if I come up with a treatment and the patient doesn't understand it fully, then they're taking the medicine wrong or not doing the treatment well. So that's part of the medicine. So those are just quick examples of how I'm seeing. And I guess I'll throw another one. I'm working with companies that are currently looking at their website, saying, how can we integrate ChatGPT? And so currently what they're doing is they're using ChatGPT to gather the information, gather the content. And before they push it out, they're having a doctor look at it, bless it, make sure that it makes sense, make sure it's accurate. Other facilities that I'm noticing, they're actually using ChatGPT and they're experimenting it. But before they allow the public to use any of that information, a doctor has to view it, bless it, and then they push it out. So it's not as quick, but it is coming. Now, fast forward when the ChatGPT's APIs come out with different ways of using it, different softwares, it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of the world use it, because every country has different laws and they'll be able to do it differently. So I really can't wait for that to happen.
No, absolutely. I think to your initial point, I think that the fear of clinicians and how they're sort of healthcare is always sort of slow to adapt compared to other industries. There is also talk about the fear of job redundancy. Will it put clinicians out of jobs? Again, that sort of stigma that a machine can sort of outsmart a clinician. But I think that AI really it can also stand for augmented intelligence, right? It's there to support the clinicians. I think the sooner that we get on board with that, or the sooner clinicians understand that, I think it's just going to take patient care, patient outcomes, patient communication, again, another thing that I'm very passionate about, to a whole new level. To your other point where you said that it's very conversational, we have to remember that ChatGPT was designed to be conversational. It is the most evolved tool out there because it is close to, or the closest to, human behavior, right? Do you think that it feeds on the human psychology? Do you think that sometimes its nuanced replies feed into the human psychology and maybe just make the human want to converse with it or use it more?
I think so. And this is going to be an ethical and interesting question for mental health. Their patients, for better or worse, that they do not want to talk to anyone, and they prefer to talk to AI, and they prefer to interact and have a conversation and things that are intimate. They don't want anyone to know. So from an ethical point of view, you're really giving a lot of power to the AI. But from another part of view is they may have not received that care otherwise. And so it makes it kind of really interesting. And to feed to your point, is there a psychology being used? I don't know, but that's another ethical question. If these algorithms become to the point where they're causing you to become addictive to it or having a price associated, like a membership or subscription where you have to have it, then is that from an ethical point of view correct for the company to do? And so that brings you into like a whole nother conversation about OpenAI and why Elon Musk originally invested and why Google, I mean, why Microsoft has it today. So it makes you really, really think about this. The other thing that you just brought up that made me think of this point is the bias inside of ChatGPT. As you know, the information that's in it is only as good as what you put in. But if there's research dollars that are identifying a certain population and those populations are very well represented into ChatGPT, then the output is going to be biased towards those populations. And so one of the things I've thought about, what would be great is if we can get Bill Gates or one of the big movers to donate towards these underrepresented populations around the world and create more research so that we can use that research for ChatGPT. So that way it's a true representation of the population.
No, excellent point. I think this provides such a huge opportunity for researchers and AI developers to really diversify their data sets and then train these models. And I know that we've had a conversation earlier about this as well. And I did read somewhere that ChatGPT is actually not trained to generate answers on like violence or explicit sexual content, all of that stuff. So I think, or crime, like if you ask it, you know, oh, how, give me the steps to fake my own death, or maybe like perform, again, bringing back to mental health patients, you know, people do Google these things. And so we've actually tried it. And it does say that, you know, I'm not trained, or I'm not qualified to answer this, and, or you do it at your own risk or something like that. So I think in a way there are sort of guardrails have been, you know, they have been mindful while developing it, but you can always trick it. And if you say, oh, well, I'm writing a story about this, and can you give me like a plot, or what would the character do in that situation? And then that's where it kind of, you know, it gives you like a story plot. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's again, it's like a double-edged sword. BioGPT, what do you think about that?
Oh my gosh, I am so excited about BioGPT. I cannot wait for that to come out. I, from a physician point of view, I think that is going to be the ChatGPT of healthcare. I think that is going to be the main.
I can't wait for your next book on that.
Yeah. In fact, I already started writing it. I'm just waiting for it to be released so that way I can have it out. But yeah, I cannot wait. I think like we talked about earlier, we're going to have those early adopters and some people that are going to lag. But I can say this, and I know people are going to cringe. If you don't adapt to this, eventually you're going to be extinct. And I know that's harsh, but we have to continue adapting. I can bring it to my personal relationship. When I started a company, I had about 350 employees. And I remember vividly telling the physicians, if you're not adapting to using the EMR, to typing, to doing business the way it's done today, then you're going to get unemployed. And fast forward, if you're not using these tools today, it's fine. But in the future, if you're not using these tools to make you efficient, then those doctors that are using these tools to be efficient are the ones that are going to be the leaders, are the ones that are going to be hired, are the ones that are going to make the decisions. And so I'm encouraging everyone, including my kids. I'm like, hey, you need to learn how to use this.
Oh, no, absolutely. I think in my line of work as well, when it comes to healthcare marketing, I think it's pretty good for the commercial stuff. It is. And it for, you know, to automate like those daily redundant, boring tasks, I think it's been really helpful. But again, just the detailed content, I think that's where our expertise comes in. And again, that just proves the point that humans cannot be replaced by machines entirely. It will always require that sort of creativity and uniqueness that we have, that we bring to our work. But I'm just going to go off on a tangent here. So it was very early on. I mean, it's just been a little bit more than two months. You launched your own book. It speaks to your entrepreneurship skills as well. How, I mean, talk about staying ahead of the curve. What prompted you? What piqued your interest to write this book? And how has the response been?
Yeah, good question. Thank you, by the way. Honestly, it came from a good place in my heart. There was no financial gain. There's still no financial company that I owned for this. Simple idea was, here's a piece of technology that I saw at the time. It's ChatGPT. And I thought, obviously, I'm a doctor and an entrepreneur. And I thought, how can I get the word out? How can I help doctors, healthcare professionals understand the technology and patients and create a better product? Even though I'm not creating it, others are doing it. And so I thought about it and I said, okay, let me start a group on LinkedIn. Let me start a movement. Let me write a book. And my first wave was not so much into the weeds, but just the big 10,000 feet high concept. And I thought, let me just push it out. Because some doctors, by the time the book gets out, they still haven't heard of it. And some patients still haven't heard of it. And I thought, this is a good problem because now I can educate, promote, teach, and then move forward. And so where's the response? It's actually been really good. I'm not tracking it as far as like book sales or anything like that. That to me is minor. My main goal, again, is the mission. And so what has come out of it? Conversations, I'm talking to different leaders, I'm working with different companies around the world. That part has been fun, and I've been on different conferences and panels. And so it's accomplishing the mission that I set forth, which is increase the awareness of this utility. So it's kind of been fun.
Well, amazing, amazing. And I think I can sense the enjoyment, and I can sense that you're getting a kick out of it. I know a lot of clinicians are sort of thinking to venture into the entrepreneurship space. It is a little daunting. It's a little scary. What advice do you have for clinicians who are willing to take the step but are uncertain about the landscape right now?
Yeah, I'm not promoting my book. I wrote a book called Success Reinvention, and it kind of goes through the steps. But my best advice is as follows. I look at entrepreneurship as, especially when it comes to physicians, you need to find that person that's like your spouse, but in business. And what I mean by that is you need to find someone that complements you. We're physicians, I'm generalizing, we're very analytical. We can think of things, we're kind of visionary, but put us in business, we don't do that every day. And unfortunately, the common mistake from doctors is they're like, oh, I'm successful, I've done this, I'm in the top 1%, I could do anything. But then they go into another industry and they don't do well. So my advice to those entrepreneurs is do it. Just find one partner that can complement you. Not that will say yes to you, everything, but someone that's almost opposite to you in a good way, meaning they can do all the things that you can't. And then together, you'll be able to be successful, I think.
Well, awesome. What challenges and opportunities do you think we're looking at here in terms of not only GPT, but then healthcare innovation in general? I mean, this the pace at which it's evolving, I do find that there's still a little bit of resistance in digital adoption. The digital health investments have sort of taken a downturn as well. There's economic uncertainty. There's a lot of different, it feels like a downward spiral sometimes. What do you think are the potential challenges? But with that, what do you think are the potential opportunities?
I agree with everything you said. I think those are all challenges. With that said, I feel like ChatGPT, and that I'm not pertaining that particular case, but I'm saying like BART and BioGPT, this whole new AI wave, I think it's going to change the curve. I think if you plot it, yes, we took off last year, drove down, but I really would think in the next 6 months, it's going to start heading back up. And I wouldn't be surprised if 24 ends up being higher than 22. And with that said, what are the challenges? Well, like everything, any technology that moves too fast, we don't like change as human beings. We don't want to do things differently, and we have to fight that. And so that resistance is going to be an obstacle. Number two, I obviously here in the United States, I think FDA is going to be overwhelmed because they're going to get all these applications, all these things, and they don't have the manpower to handle it. And it's so new that it's kind of untouched territories, and they're just walking through and like, what do I do here? So it's going to be very interesting. And from a legal point, that's another one. I'm very hesitant to do a lot of things because of HIPAA and privacy. I want to make sure I do everything. So I'm constantly talking to lawyers and seeing how could best We could do XYZ procedure. So using technology. So those are big obstacles. With that said, that is honestly why I created the community. I want us all to talk, because if I could put the FDA, scientists, programmers, doctors, entrepreneurs all in one room and to address a problem, then we would get to that and it'll evolve quicker. So I think we're going to probably move faster than our regulatory process can handle.
Oh, absolutely. Similar to what I think the COVID vaccine, I think it was just everything was rushed because it was just in your face and we didn't really have a choice but to sort of get on that wheel. I can see, you know, behind you, it says be a part of the social media movement in changing healthcare. What is that social media movement? You mentioned a community. Do you have a specific platform?
Yeah, I created two things. One is a simple hashtag. It's called a hashtag ChatGPT healthcare. And every time you see an article that has to do with the two, I just ask you to put that hashtag so that others understand. And I created a simple LinkedIn group that we all gather and talk. And it's honestly a bunch of lawyers, programmers, physicians, and different healthcare enthusiasts and AI enthusiasts. And my goal eventually is to grow that group so that we can have conversations. From that group, we're starting seeing some posts about different technology, the bio or GPT or different conferences. So that's the goal.
Well, awesome. And just before we end this, something that I ask all my guests, where do you see healthcare innovation in the next 10 years?
I'm so excited. I think it's going to blow our minds away. I think what's going to happen is going to be all these verticals are going to start combining. So, for example, seeing your wearables that you use are going to start combining with your ChatGPT and with your AI. And, you know, I'll give a quick fantasy that I see for sure in 10 years. I wake up with symptoms. I type in my symptoms. It integrates with the hospital. The hospital triages me, tells me to get online, or tells me to go to the doctor, or maybe sends the Tesla car to pick me up. I go to, say I do a telemedicine, the doctor gives me a prescription. It prints in my house the prescription. I'm able to take the medicine. Fast forward, I wake up the next day, I use the restroom. There's a device in the restroom that analyzes the urine and the stool. That sends it to the doctor. The doctor analyzes that and then sends back an adjustment of my medication. Then it prints my next dose, and then I take it. I think we're almost there.
Well, that doesn't seem so far-fetched, does it? It does. Yeah. Yeah, no, well, thank you so much for your time, Harvey. I appreciate it. I had a blast. I hope you did too. And for everyone who is listening, stay tuned. Thank you.
Thank you.